Franklin, there is something I talked to Stefan about before he left, and I think it's really important. And in Tony's opening talk, introduction at the top of our website, right? Uh-huh. First of all, he says the underlying issue is us, we're the problem, and that is the human condition. And then he does the upriver story, right? And that only lasts that little presentation, short and sweet. It only lasts a page or so, right? Which is 5 minutes or something like that. And then he does this talk about the traditional excuse we've had, which is that we're basically have savage instincts. Now, what I talked to Stefan about, I want to talk about now, is just how pervasive that is. Okay. If you push anybody, nudge them enough, they will say that, look, it's all human nature, and you can't change human nature, Jeremy, you know? Human nature. And you saw Geldof do the same thing at the beginning of his thing. He said... So, Bob, you're a fabulous humanitarian. However, when it comes to the fundamental question of the Holy Grail of why the human condition, you said to me a few days ago, they are questions for biologists like you to answer. And on that score, you remarked, we're not all going to turn into people who are all hugging each other, Jeremy, because we are all competitive by nature. The question is, how do we relieve ourselves from our unchangeable primal instincts that are selfish and competitive? Now, that is so... drenched into our whole psychology. People, and the code word for it is human nature. Yeah. People say, look, you can't change human nature. That's the everyday description of that interpretation, that we have savage animal instincts. Human nature means unsaid words, which is to be competitive, selfish, and aggressive. That's our animal instinctive heritage, and you can't change that. The job of every human is to try to restrain that as best they can. And that excuse pervades everybody's mind. Everybody that's resigned takes it up and lives off it and practices it. The survival of the fittest is basically that we've got savage instincts that are competing to reproduce their genes. So it saturates, like Tony, you know... when he was doing, preparing these speeches, he added that part two, that second 5 minutes, to the full savage instincts excuse, because he went up to his mother, and after a little bit, she was sort of pushed to the point where she sort of blurted out, okay, look, Tony, it's all very well to be idealistic, but the fact is, human nature is what it's always been, and you can't change that. Humans are always going to be selfish and greedy, there's always going to be bad people, and there'll always be wars and murders, and you know, that's her reasoning. So you're fighting when you try to teach this to others. You're fighting that underlying assumption in their mind. That you're just being idealistic. Yeah. Look, humans have got savage animal instincts in them, and our job is to try to contain them as best we can. We're all born brutish, savage, and aggressive barbarians, you know, and we've got to try to restrain that as best we can with our conscious mind. And so they're all living off that. As I said, pre-resigned children don't buy that at all. Because their instincts are just saturated with yet-to-be-repressed awareness of our moral nature, right. Which is to be loving and selfless, not to be competitive and aggressive. Mm-hmm. So children, before they resign, don't accept... They know, their whole being is letting them know that this is all wrong. Their instincts are to be cooperative and loving, and the world is not like that. That's what they're wrestling with. Mm-hmm. So they don't... But what happens after they resign is they grab this excuse that we've got savage animal instincts in us. like you wouldn't believe, because it gets them off the hook. So that's why Transform Your Life begins with Geldof saying the traditional excuse, look, Jeremy, you can't get people to, you're being idealistic, you're not going to get people to hug each other and be nice to each other, because we're all innately competitive and aggressive. That's our eternal affliction, that's human nature, you can't change it. You know, you can try to contain it, and that's our responsibility as a human to try to restrain it, but we're all brutes underneath. Then it goes on in the next few paragraphs and says that's just not true. That's right. The excuse we use when we're waiting for the real excuse, got us off the hook. And then I do this mental flip and I say, look, just imagine that we did have cooperative and loving instincts, and that the bonobos, and I quote Hesiod and Plato. You know, so the first point is that it's a lie for two reasons. Descriptions of human behavior, such as egocentric, arrogant, inspired, depressed, deluded, or pessimistic, all recognize the involvement of our species' fully conscious mind, that there is a psychological dimension to our behavior. We don't suffer from the animal condition, must reproduce your dreams, but the conscious mind-based psychological human condition. And secondly, as Darwin said, you know, we've got moral instincts. And Darwin said the moral sense affords the best and highest instinct between us and the lower animals. So it's just not true that we've got brutish instincts. But when you go this journey, which part one of this little booklet does, it performs a great trick. It says, well, look, just, okay, I know you're probably believing in that we're all selfish by nature. That's human nature. But let's just imagine that we did have cooperative instincts, and this is what Plato said, this is what Hesiod said, when gods are like, we're all a golden race, you know, and Richard Hindberg, every religion begins with recognition that human consciousness has been separated from its divine source, sense of oneness. Rousseau, nothing more gentle than man, all that stuff. Then the bonobos, and the description of bonobos was exactly what Plato and Hesiod described early humans as having to live by, and they didn't even know about bonobos. And the fossils of a early human and a bonobo, almost indistinguishable. And so the evidence is undeniable. But then it says, but if that's true, and then we became conscious, and as it were, we became competitive and aggressive and divisive, and in the metaphorical story, we're thrown out of the Garden of Eden, the state of original innocence, the Garden of Eden. How ashamed would we have been of having destroyed paradise? So guilt-ridden, unbelievably guilt-ridden. I mean, even if you look at the Adam Stork story, which just says he flew off course, you know, migratory flight path, how guilty would Adam Stork have felt, unable to explain why he had defied his instincts? But if you add to that that our instincts weren't to a flight path, but to being cooperative and loving and selfless, then that's doubly guilty as soon as we become competitive and aggressive. And then it's a triple whammy when you realize that integrative meaning is the theme of existence, and now we're being divisive. So now we're at odds with God, we're at odds with our original instinctive self or soul. It's a horrendously guilt-ridden state. So if you just walk a mile in that state of extreme guilt, that's the beauty of chapter one of part one of this booklet, Transform Your Life, because it paints the picture. How wonderful were we living in this golden age of togetherness? Then we became conscious, and for some reason we messed it all up. We destroyed paradise. Then how incredibly guilt-ridden must we have been? Now, if you allow that appreciation of how guilty we must have been into your mind, just on the logic of what I've said, it would be enormously guilt-ridden. And then, imagine when we came up with the idea, we looked at animals hunting and killing each other, and we said, that's just our nature, original nature. And that our conscious mind then has to come in and mediate and play the hero and against these vile instincts. It's such a fabulous excuse. Because instead of our instincts being loving and cooperative and condemning, suddenly they're the evil part. instead of our mind being the guilty party that caused us to be thrown out of the Garden of Eden, it's made out to be the mediating hero. So you see, this true explanation of the human condition of the Adam Stork story makes clear, has humans coming out the hero, doesn't it? But that cheat explanation, that we have violent, savage instincts, not cooperative, loving ones, and that our conscious mind has to mediate, you know, that makes the conscious mind the hero also. Yeah. Both gets us to be heroes, but one does it falsely, right? And it's an unbelievably relieving excuse to come up with, that our instincts are savage and our conscious mind has to manage them as best we can. So when Tony's mother said to Tony, almost sort of, "Tony, you're a nice boy, you're idealistic, and no doubt Jeremy's very idealistic and naive," the same words as you used in your speech, "but I'm afraid human nature is human nature, and it'll never change. There's always going to be bad people, there's always going to be evil in the world, and the job of us conscious humans is to try to restrain that evil side of ourselves, our vicious instincts." You see how condescending that was, and how appreciative. Nice work, Tone, to believe in idealism, but you're up against reality. Now, you've got to stand back and look at that. Yeah. So here's Tony's mother walking into the room, sort of thing. Here's Tony coming up with all this stuff that, you know, he's very excited about, wanting to read the book or something. And she's, yes, Tone, nice. You know, I love you, son, you know, you're a lovely lad, whatever, I don't know. But in her head is this stuff running around, that human nature is unchangeable. And that's what you're up against, my well-meaning son, kind of thing. Is that right, sort of what I'm saying?
Yep.
And, you know, like almost patronising. And Tony is perplexed, you know, because it's so entrenched. She's so comfortable in this understanding that she's got in the head. And that's what I'm trying to warn you about, and Stefan about before he left, that's what's running through everybody's head around the place, and that they just think we're being idealistic. Now, we can now understand what's happening with the left wing and their anger with Trump, because if you extrapolate from Bob Geldof said, because he's extreme left wing, right? He said, "Jeremy, you can't change human nature. Humans innately, you know, brutal and savage." You know, he said, "We're not all going to turn to people who are hugging each other, Jeremy, because we're all competitive by nature. So the question is, how do we relieve ourselves from our unchangeable primal instincts?" There are his exact words. Unchangeable primal instincts that are, by inference, savage and competitive. What the left wing are believing, this is really important, is that therefore it's unchangeable, right? We have to impose dogma. We have to just demand. The only way we're ever going to solve this unchangeable nature we've got, human nature, is to impose idealism onto it. That's the only solution. What I'm trying to say is that the left-wing culture is all based in an extrapolation from this fundamental belief that we're competitive and selfish by nature, that our instincts are selfish. Because from there, that's when they say you can, that's why they justify, at some point we're just going to have to superimpose, force idealism on the world, because you're up against human nature, which won't be idealistic. That's our only solution. So they pursue that path to the bitter end. They're insisting on dogma. But once you understand this explanation, that our conscious mind, you know, the instincts, the Adam Stork story, then the only way to actually relieve the world of its, what we can now understand as psychosis, is through understanding. But where we're up against is everybody that is living off human nature is unchangeable, are believing that therefore the only solution is to dogmatically impose idealism on the equation. Okay. So they don't want, they just thought, well, we'll all go globalization, multiculturalism, let everybody flood into all countries, everybody, you know, and that way we will impose idealism. Now that's all based on this fundamental untruth that we're selfish and competitive by nature. That's why they justify their selfishness. Okay. So when I try to point out to him that we're trying to fix the world through a psychological solution, it's not resonating because he's believing, as his opening comment, he began straight away. First thing he said, Jeremy, you can't get everyone hugging each other.
Right.
You're a lovely idealistic boy, young man, or old man, and you want everyone to hug each other, but they're not going to do it because that. And then he went on to say, the question is, how do we relieve ourselves from our unchangeable primal instincts? And the unsaid words there is by, the only way is obviously by imposing idealism. And that's his solution. See, the question is, how do we relieve ourselves from our unchangeable primal... The mistake is the unchangeable primal instincts. And immediately he said that. I said, no. They're psychological, and psychosis can be healed through understanding. So I had the perfect counter response, and I said it. But he's locked onto his excuse, right? And that's where you will run into a problem with other people in Africa, like maybe the eye surgeon, was it, that you ran into briefly, who's been reading this. I'm just warning you that you're up against an inner that they all subscribe to, that we're human, the problem of human nature is unchangeable, unsaid words, because we've got innate selfish and aggressive instincts, right? And beyond that, if they extrapolate from that therefore the only solution is to impose ideality onto that situation is the only... So that's their justification for dogma.
Right.
Like Marx says, the objective is not to understand the world, but to make it social, cooperative. Socialism, communism.
Yeah.
So why I'm explaining all this, because it's so important. Therefore, the only way to get them off that is to start from the beginning and explain that it's not... we don't suffer from selfish, competitive animal instincts. Yeah. Ours is a psychological problem. And then to get them to understand, start again. So just to use the little metaphor of Tony's mother's situation. So you, or we, or in that case Tony, runs into someone who's resigned in the old world. They think we're just being idealistic and naive.
Yeah.
Underpinning that is the belief that we're, by nature, competitive and selfish and aggressive. That's our animal heritage, right? That's human nature, and you can't change that. Idealistic as you'd like, hug each other, as Gildoff said, won't happen. As Tony's mother said, she used that phrase, you know, there will always be bad people. Is that right, Tone?
Yep.
So the starting point to unravel them is to those two points, which is descriptions of human behavior, like arrogance, you know, alienated, all imply the psychological problem. Clearly we don't have, we don't suffer from a genetic opportunism driven animal condition, but from a psychological human condition. And secondly, our moral instincts are to be cooperative and loving, which is the voice of our conscience. We haven't got a conscience, didn't come out of thin air, it exists. As Charles Darwin said, the moral aspect of us is the forges the highest distinction between us and the lower animals. So now that you can see what's going on out there with Trump and co, they're getting nowhere, because the left wing believe that at the end of the day, because from the starting point that we have innate, you know, unchangeable nature, they have to impose a dogma. That's their justification for their dogma. Once we understand the Adam Stork story and the real explanation, dogma is an anathema, the opposite, because dogma means no knowledge, no thinking.
Yeah.
It was the most beautiful lines in all the speeches was yours when you said, you know, knowledge is freedom, and no knowledge is more liberating than self-knowledge. Magic words. And but you see, you've got to understand what we're up against. The enemy don't subscribe to that there's anything wrong with dogma. Because they say, you know, our instincts are dogmatic in a sense, and we have to impose a dogma to contain them. And that's what you've got to deal with. That's the magic of this book, the structure of this book. Because it says, using Geldof's own words, but when Tony's mother, we're selfish by nature, and you can't do anything about that. And then immediately, that's bullshit.
Right.
We had to have that excuse, but it's crap.
Right.
And those two explanations, why it's crap, you know, all these things about we've got arrogant, they're all psychological conditions, conscious mind-based psychological, and that our instincts are to be cooperative and loving, right? And then it does this journey. It says, well, just imagine we did have loving and cooperative instincts. Let's imagine the conscious mind did stuff it all up. Well, how guilty would we have for it?
Right.
And then, God, would we have needed some excuse at that point?
Yeah.
And then this one that we've got, savvy, would have been fantastic excuse, absolutely fabulous excuse.
Right.
Suddenly our instincts are bad, not good. Suddenly our conscious mind is the hero, not the villain. Reverse the truth, lie, out of jail.
Right.
And then everything flows from that. Right? Tony dealing with his mother, you dealing with people out there, or Stefan, us all dealing with people out there, have got the same problem.
Okay.
Tony's mother is running with, we have selfish, human nature is fundamentally selfish, and you can't really change that. So to make any headway, Tony's got to undermine that or throw some doubt onto that.
Right.
At least acknowledge that he's aware of that.
Right.
So that's the beauty of all these books.
Right.
And you'll see that the structures in them, because the first one, this is the Let's Go booklet, which is the video at the top of our homepage. The first 5 minutes is simply the real upriver story, where the real problem. But as quick as a flash, the second one says, and don't, I know you're all thinking, human nature is unchangeable, but you're wrong. Boom, boom. Darwin said this, and we've got arrogant and all these things implies it.
Let's just have 1 minute.
You're right. The first Art of War manual, the first thing in the Art of War manual is to know your enemy. And I'm trying to nail what our enemy is.
Right.
And it's this bloody problem, right? And that's what's so good about Transform Your Life. It deals with it up front, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And even uses Geldof's own statement. And it's got this wonderful trick of, well, look, just imagine we did have loving cooperative instincts. How guilty would we have become?
Right.
Because no one ever thinks from that angle. But if you did, of course he would have been guilty. And then how addictive would this bullshit explanation be? It'd be hugely addictive. And all these ivory towers of universities, Harvard, you know, build them higher and more, fill them with more and more professors. They're all working on this bullshit explanation, just refining it. As soon as it starts to throw up a lie, because if you push a lie, it'll start to fall over after a little while. So they're pushing this lie. Darwin said there's difference in reproduction rates, you know? And then Spencer and Wallace said, hey, mate, you've got to interpret that as survival of the fittest. It's a competition for survival. And so they got this old, and then they, sociobiology, even psychology, and then that was deficient, and then they patched that up. And who's the architect of all these patch-ups? Bloody E.O. Wilson.
So, you say ego, Wilson.
Ego, same thing. These huge castles, these academic institutions like Oxford and Cambridge and Harvard and whatever else, you know, they're all dedicated to maintaining this lie and refining it. It all starts with this, you know, humans feeling guilty about having destroyed paradise. Seeing animals tearing each other's throat out and say, well, that's us, you know, we've got the same heritage, suddenly feeling relief. Now, psychologically, you'd hardly be aware of why it was so relieving, because you don't understand the equation near as clearly as I've described it. Nevertheless, there's a bit deeper. Well, that's a good one, I'll use that. You know, even the sort of cavemen or the early bushmen, we should stop using cavemen because it implies that they're brutes and aggressive, and it's the opposite. But anyway, the bushmen, you know, would know, you know, they would get some relief from trying to say, well, we must have been like those animals, you know, the lion that's tearing that zebra's throat out, and that's where we've got to manage. There would have been an underlying feeling of relief. Mm. So this is where it's all coming from. Mm. So Transform Your Life is beautifully structured. It deals with the enemy's misconception straight up, mm-hmm. and acknowledges it, mm-hmm. and then proves it's wrong.
Yeah.
We've got a cooperative, loving, moral instincts, which is our conscience and so on. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on this journey and says, of course we needed this excuse, but it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And then all these universities dedicated to refining that bullshit excuse, mm-hmm. Harvard and my... And then it says, okay, so now we'll give you the real one, the psychological based one, which is the second part two, which is the Adam Stalk story. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful structure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the same integrity exists in that opening video at the top of our homepage, because mm-hmm. that's our front foot, that's the most important thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's got Tony saying, you know, that real issue is our the upriver story, that our destructive behavior, the human condition. And then straight away, bang, into all these bullshit excuses and how we've used it and how it's full of shit, how it's crap, you know? And he says, I know everyone uses the excuse that our competitive aggressive behavior is due to having savage animal instincts which are driven by the need to reproduce our genes. But surely this can't be, and then it goes on to demolish it. So the second part of that, of the part two, which is only go for a few minutes, mm-hmm. it tackles that misconception head on and solves it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, I'll give you the real psychological explanation, and that's the Adam Stalk story. So again, bang, bang, bang.
Mm-hmm.
It's dealing with it properly, sequentially, head on.
Yeah.
Same as that.
Yeah.
That's a little bit more depth because we've got a bit more space to do it in.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks a bit about the biology, the bullshit biology and so on. And and uses the bonobos as well as that to illustrate. So, and if you read Freedom, this is beginning of chapter one.
Mm-hmm.
It says, the opening paragraph, this book liberates you, the reader, from all this human, from underlying insecurity resulting from the psychosis that all humans have suffered from since we became fully conscious species some 2 million years ago. This underlying insecurity and psychosis that exists within every human is the product of a very deep anxiety and uncertainty, and knowing, not knowing why, when the ideals of cooperative and loving, are we competitive and aggressive? Certainly, we have relied heavily on the excuse that our behaviour is no different from that seen in the animal kingdom, that we humans are competitive, aggressive and selfish because of our animal heritage. We have argued that we are, as Lord Tennyson said, red in tooth and claw, a victim of savage animal instincts that compel us to fight and compete for each shelter, food, shelter, as E.O. Wilson has postulated, but that, of course, can't be the real reason.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have gone, certainly we have relied on, now that's one sentence,
mm-hmm.
two sentence, three sentence, the third sentence of Freedom gets straight onto that lie that we have savage animal instincts.
Right.
So it structured in with enormous integrity.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it nails that argument right up front. That nails it right up front. That nails it right up front. And it's so important because that's why we have trouble with the left wing.
Right.
Because they just think that dogma is the only way we can solve it.
Mm.
The unsaid words are because we have human nature is unchangeable, we have these instincts that we can't change.
Mm.
So the only solution, therefore, is to impose ideality on it. Now, that turns out to be the absolute opposite of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
We had to become more and more upset to find sufficient knowledge, and only then could we explain the psychosis and get rid of it.
Right.
Whereas they're saying we don't need any knowledge. As Marx said, the objective is not to understand the world, but just to make it social.
Mm-hmm.
And therein is the nutshell of the problem. That's how they validate what, and that's what Geldof was saying. Jeremy, you want everybody to hug each other, but I've worked this through many times in my life.
Mm.
Look, mate, human nature is what it is. You never change it.
Mm.
There's always going to be bad people, as Tony's mother said, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And all we have to as Gildot said, the question is, how do we control our brutish nature, our innate behaviour, unchangeable, unsaid words? Obviously, the only way we can do that is to impose ideality on it. So that's why we've got this incessant argument between the left and the right. Okay. The left doesn't see any wrong with dogma, whereas the right knows that dogma is the antithesis of what solves us. Dogma means no knowledge. Dogma means just impose this without any rational explanation, whereas we're searching for understanding. So you can see just how insidious, if that's the right word, bad anyway, that that logic that starts with human nature is unchangeable because we've got savage animal instincts. How dangerous that is, how it just leads to all these other stages of dishonesty and bullshit and deception and delusion. And then you end up with the left wing going crazy, you know, and it doesn't see anything wrong with dogma. And whereas, in fact, when you understand the human condition, is the search for the opposite of dogma, is the search for knowledge, because only knowledge, ultimately self-knowledge, can liberate us. So this is very important for Stefan, because Stefan just wants to tell him the Adam Stork story and not deal with all this kind of thing, which has got its rationale, because what Stefan is, his strategy is, look, if you catch him in a sort of unfocused moment and you just tell him the Adam Stork story, it's so plausible. Oh, geez, that makes sense. You have to walk away, walk around for a week and think about it and get back to, oh, no, we've got innate competitive instincts, you know, before you get the old defence back in place. Yeah. But Stefan's argument is, but by then we've got our foot in the door, right. You know, so you don't have to hit him up with all this complicated stuff about, you know, human condition is the real issue and that we're using this false excuse. Dodge all that, get straight into the Adam Stork story. So that's why I sat him down and took him through this. Okay. Because he needs a very clear understanding when he's talking to people, like Tony talking to his mother, what he's actually dealing with. And he might be able to trick some to just to listen to Adam's talk. Oh, shit, that all stacks up, you know? That all makes sense. That's very plausible, you know? But really, if you don't deal with this underlying problem, which these three books do, and very quickly, then you're cheating. You're going to try and cheat your way through. But it's just important to know, because when you talk to people, like I'll give you a little scenario. You spoke to that doctor who's looking at your eye.
Ear doctor.
Huh? Ear doctor. That's right. You've got this ear problem. Pressure building up behind the ears coming from your nasal sinuses. And which is probably from allergy or something, and not too worried about it. But and he's been looking at that, at Transform Your Life. And you're hoping he's made some progress. And you're pretty comfortable that he is, because he said, I've got an appointment at a hospital. I have to go and leave straight away, but I am interested in it. Right? Now, you might be right. But I don't know. I got a gut instinct that he might start to hit a wall, you know, and start to feel a bit confronted and not want. Yeah. But if that's the case and you start talking to him, you might notice that he starts saying, look, same as Gildoff, look, I'm not sure we've got moral instincts, or I'm not sure that we've got a cooperative past like that. I doubt that. Unsaid words are what I actually believe in, that we've got competitive, brutish, savage instincts. And other unsaid words, I subscribe to that other philosophy that everyone else is using, which is that we've got savage instincts. And that might be what you're up against.
Yeah.
Now, if that's the case and you're forewarned by this talk, then you can explain very clearly, I know what you're subscribing to. I know the rationale behind that. But these are the arguments against that. And that was just a holding excuse until we found the real one.
Right.
So now, because you've told him that you know what the game he's playing, that disarms him. That makes him a bit more likely to listen to you.
Yeah.
As opposed to, look, shit, I didn't even know that what that argument is you're using. But if you're ahead of the play, in effect, that gives you more power to sort of persuade him to think, look a bit deeper.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying, and I'm just warning Stefan that trying to dodge part one and part two and both these things. Well, it's all in part one in that one, and part one and two in the video. You might encounter problems because you haven't dealt with their underlying excuse. Absolutely. So, is that all, Timmy?
Yep, for sure.
But it's a warning we all need to, a very clear understanding with this this information. Mm. Otherwise we get frustrated with the left wing. Mm. How can they believe in dogma, you know? Mm. When we know, once you understand the Adam Stokes story, that dogma is the opposite of what we need. We need knowledge, more and more knowledge, until one day we got enough knowledge. Mm-hmm. They say, fuck knowledge,
right.
You know? Mm. That's where it's all locked up. Mm. That's where the whole impasse is locked up around that crap.
Mm. Awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just wanted to give you that, you know, summary.
Yeah.
No worries. So now can we have some biscuits?
You know, one of my first experiences of a negative reaction was giving free to a scientist, an anthropologist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was incredibly dismissive because he very quickly realized that it was, you know, promoting the teleological concept.
Yeah.
And that is just, it's a no-go zone for science. Mm-hmm. Is that teleology is like the devil to science.
Whereas acknowledgement of integrated meaning.
Really?
Teleology means the tendency in nature to form wholes. It's admission of integrated meaning.
The devil to science is egotism, you know. That's people pushing their own theories.
Yeah, it's really incestuous. You know, Jan Smuts, very famous South African. I think it was called the Smuts Highway and the Smuts Airport.
Yes, it's the Jan Smuts Airport.
But they've changed it all. Like they got rid of Cecil Rhodes for being so exploitive. By now he would have built a railway from one end of Africa to the other, and well, you can imagine sort of, and there are beautiful crossings in it and all this stuff, and tunnels for animals to go through. But it's true. They were incredibly dismissive and brutalising.
And anyway, they made a lot of money.
Yeah, well, they're all, that's how.
But look at the Rhodes. Rhodes Scholar still based on.
Yeah, that's right. But that
his fortune.
But that's the thing. Money, code for capitalism, which is code for materialism. Mm-hmm. Materialism is the only compensation there is for cashing your soul in.
True.
So that's the justification. Sure, they got hungry for money, you know. They ripped your heart out of your country. Still doing it. But anyway, so John Smuts is now relegated to the garbage tip. But he's a very great. He came up with the term holism.
Okay.
And he's a first principle denial free thinker. That guy, amazingly honest thinker, Smuts.
Mm.
And he wrote a book about holism. Okay. And I always get them confused. Teleology is tendency in nature to form wholes, or is that holism? Is tendency in nature?
They're both the same, aren't they?
They're the same thing, but one's got a different definition to the other, but they both mean the same thing.
Mm. So teleology is to do with purpose. Mm. And
there's purpose or design.
Yes, there's purpose or design. And holism is the tendency in nature to form wholes.
Which is the purpose.
Which is the purpose, yeah, right. //, all the same. Yeah, but anyway, he's a great South African, Van der Post. So he's produced some great denial-free thinkers. Because it's our soul's home. So Africa had a double-edged sword. Some people a lot of people that went to Africa, Europeans, it turned them crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's too confronting, all this innocent nature and the world around them. They just shot the crap out of it. They just murdered animals by the hundreds of thousands. It was terrible. It was just a bloodletting. It was just, it was psychotic. It was sick behavior. It was just to get even with the innocents. All this, if you take humans back to their childhood home without any defense for the reason they left it, it's unbearable. And they, you know, in Nairobi, everyone was fucking everyone else's wife. The whole thing went crazy. They were just out the gate, you know, Diane Blixen Hatton, Finch Hatton, and all that stuff out of Africa. And, they were inspired. Wrote some wonderful things like Elspeth Hussey wrote "The Flame Trees of Theca" and all this sort of stuff. And it produced some great prophets in Van der Post and
Olive Schreiner.
Olive Schreiner.
Murray.
Eugene Murray, yeah. And Smuts. Mm. Yeah, they're three, four very great prophets. You know, that soulfulness of Africa can be very nurturing, which is what the equivalent of Australia was, which is one of the reasons you wanted to come here. You wanted to see the golden interior of the Africa-like landscape, which we haven't been able to show you. Tim's done the best. He took you down to a big gully and saw some natural bushland, but we haven't gone over the mountains yet. That's for next trip.
Uh-huh.
So holism, Tim said teleology gets in people. They really hate it because they know how dangerous it is.
Right.
So Tim's right. As well as that we have a cooperative, loving past, and that's something that we can't bear, and we need to replace it with the excuse that we have a brutish past, as well as that great truth, right?
Yeah.
The other two really great truths that immediately come to mind are integrative meaning, teleology, because that condemns us. If we're supposed to be integrative, why are we divisive? And of course, nurturing. They're the ones that humans are allergic to,
right.
Admitting. Yeah, so what Tim's saying is true, you know. You're more than likely to run into one of those three if you're talking to anybody. But scientists are really full of it, you know, full of dishonesty. Mm. There is a beautiful chapter in Freedom, chapter 2. It's one that talks about why science is mechanistic, 2.2 or something. Good book, this one, you know. 2.4, how scientists cope with the issue of the human condition. So that's really an explanation for mechanistic and reductionist, an explanation for reductionist and mechanistic science. And so if you go back to the beginning of science and you try to boil it all down to one meeting with a couple of scientists, right? The whole of the history of science. Science means knowledge. So they start talking, right?
Yeah.
And they start... this actually happened between Plato and Aristotle.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about all these truths that we were once cooperative and loving and so on, and the meaning of life is to be integrative and nurturing was the prime mover and human development and all that sort of stuff. But... without the explanation, the real defense for ourselves, it was an unbearable truth. So we had this huge problem, these scientists, how to investigate the truth without confronting it.
Yeah.
It was a real problem. So you can imagine the scientists that got around the desk on the first day to try to solve this problem, how are we going to tackle this problem? Probably got themselves so confused and rattled that they gave up, and next day they brought in a fresh group of scientists and they have another look and see if they can crack it. Because this problem, how do we investigate a truth we can't confront?
Right.
How do we walk up the truth facing backwards so we don't see it while we're investigating? That's kind of the dilemma.
Mm.
So they came up, eventually they sat and got their shit head worked out and they said, right, look, we'll have to avoid any truth that comes up that's confronting until we find the bigger truth that defends us. So any truth that condemns us, we'll have to deny, until one day we find the full truth, and then and only then we can safe admit those truths.
Right.
So over here we'll put a box, and we'll put any truth that we start stumble upon that's confronting into that. So we'll deny it. That's a denial box, and we'll work over here. So we'll count frogs' eggs and build up a sort of database about behaviour of animals and all this. That's pretty safe. That's pretty safe. That can all stay outside the box. But as soon as it edges towards any of those terrifying truths of integrative meaning or nurturing created humanity, or that we have a loving cooperative soul, we have to leave them in the box. So we'll focus on the mechanisms behind the workings of the world, in hope that one day when we find understanding of the details, then and only then will we confront the bigger truth that's over above, which is the integrative meaning and the issue of being the human condition. So we left the big issue, this overarching issue of the human condition and all these truths relating to it, such as integrative meaning. We avoided those and we focused away. I can't look at that. We just collect the details, collect the frog's eggs, build up some data information on that, collect some more information over here, study this and build up published papers about that, publishing papers. So we were mechanistic, not holistic. We focused on the mechanisms. We were reductionists. We reduced our focus down onto these details and didn't look up there, find some more details. Okay, and build up this store of mechanisms and details, understandings at that level, in the hope that one day, the unsaid words were that one day someone would come along who could put all these bits together.
Right.
The problem is, and that's a great strategy, it was the only way we could do it.
Yeah.
So there's a great little diagram in here of that where the scientists are doing that. This is, is it 1.2 or 2.2? 2.4. On your demo. See, this is lovely little drawing I did. So that's our condemning soul, cooperative loving soul, and this is a mechanistic and reductionist scientist. You see, they're hiding from the truth while investigating the details, finding the pieces of the jigsaw, right? And then one day, an unresigned, truthful thinking person has to come along and put all those pieces together. So that was the game plan. That's mechanistic reductionist science. This is holistic science that I'm thinking about. The problem with this little picture is that one day when they find enough details about the mechanisms reduced to make the explanation possible, they're so habituated to living in this bullshit that they don't want to let it go.
Right.
So I come along, I put it all the bits together that they found, I acknowledge that they found it, give them a big pat on the back, but they say, I'm not coming out of the cave. I'm not going to admit it. They're too habituated to living in this. So that's why we have to go off on our own and get Franklin out here from to create an institution in Africa outside of that ivory tower of rubbish. They get so entrenched in this false way. They got all their things in the box over there. These things are safe. We won't go over there. Someone comes along. It's now safe to go into the box. They won't go there. That's the problem. It gets entrenched, this mechanistic reductionist. Right? How's the headache, mate? You're doing well just to sit there. Fair dinkum. Must be terrible trying to cope with the pain.
You can drive, can't you, Franklin?
Pardon?
You can drive, can't you?
It's looking out of one eye.
I do.
Good at turning right.
Anyway, so that's mechanistic reduction science. So. Anyway, that's just some good overview.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. Awesome.